This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. And welcome to another edition of Sminty Fiction, which is a once-a-month thing that we do. It has slightly... I always say slightly. It has more soundscaping. I would say it's like not over the top, but it is definitely more soundscaping than we normally have. It is an ongoing thing that we do. This is Terminus Part 2, as the title would suggest, is Part 2 of the Terminus Trilogy, which is a thing that I wrote during National Novel Writing Month, starting in 2010.
Did you know there's a whole controversy happening at NaNoWriMo? Apparently NaNoWriMo actually hires people, and they all got laid off or something like that.
I did
They're not,
know.
Doing well. Sorry.
Well,
shout out to them.
This was many years ago for me. I guess that to say, this is an episode of Snacks. I must have been in a particular space, but none of them are currently sponsors. But a lot of brands are mentioned. So there's that. The content warning. Just in general, there's disease, death, end of the world stuff, hunger, for sure, hence the importance of snacks. Yeah, so quick recap. So the world is ending because basically people can't have children anymore because of this disease. And our main character, Tilda, has escaped from the government entity and religious entity that rose in the collapse of civilization, because she didn't want to lose him to this government entity. They are constantly on the run. They're constantly being hunted. She discovers that there is a vaccine, but these entities destroyed it. They saved one because Madison is the grandson of the leaders of this religious organization. She is able to broadcast about what they did, what happened. Madison gets the vaccine. They are on the run. There's a man on a horse. We still don't know what's going on with him.
Still
don't. I know. I was pulling this along. It's cold. They are running out of resources. They found a place to stay that had a dead body. And the phone rang. Again, terrified of phones. They did not answer it. They fled on a horse that they did steal. And then over the intercom that the government has installed to put out their messages, she gets a direct message from the leader of the resistance who she, in her view, betrayed her, asking her to come back to Washington, D.C. So that is where we are. What are they going to do? Well, let us find out and get into the fiction.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tilda glanced around, uneasy. Her skin crawled with indecision. "What do we do?" Madison whispered. Tilda shook her head, dazed. This was the second time she'd gotten a direct message over the state broadcast system demanding she go somewhere. That we could win this. She didn't trust Mark. As simple as that. She hadn't trusted him before, and her instincts had turned out to be correct. Mark had been willing to use Madison as a bargaining chip to protect his men and secure a vaccine he hadn't even been sure had existed. He'd taken Tilda and her child to Chicago against their will. Despite this, she found herself unable to despise him for it. Everything he'd done with his people and the greater good, as much as Tilda detested that phrase and mind. She didn't like it, but couldn't say she wouldn't do something similar to protect Madison. An image of the man she'd shot in the underground laboratory flashed in her mind. She tightened her grip on the reins and gave them a flick. Scout could apparently sense their tenseness and started down the road again without hesitation. Did the man with the horse work for the resistance? Were they out looking for them too? And as pressing as those questions were, they were distractions from the real one Tilda faced. Did she trust Mark? And even if she did helping secure the future for our children, as Mark put it, warrant putting Madison at risk? Should they turn around and head back into the equation of unknown variables that were converging on the very place they'd nearly lost their lives fleeing, D.C.? Tilda didn't know. Her instincts, or could it be her fear and fear alone, told her to stay away, to press on and find what safety they could as far away from DC as possible. Were fear and instinct the same thing? It boiled down to staying alive, didn't it? She didn't owe them a damn thing. That was one thing she knew with certainty. She pushed onward, aware that Madison was waiting for her answer. The question then became, why did they need her? And Madison, Mark had been sure to mention Madison, back in DC. She assumed they could have little use for her. It was Madison they wanted, or more specifically, his newly minted, immunized blood. Madison had expressed his desire to help people, if he could, but Tilda wasn't sure what that would entail, yet another unknown that made her nervous. No, she decided. Too many unknowns. Without knowing more, they'd just be venturing into enemy territory with no escape plan. And while Mark and his resistance might be at the console now, Arm could take it back. The state could take it back. Or a fringe group. It was a power vacuum, a volatile situation for the power-hungry to try and wrest control. "We can't go, Mouse," she whispered, as though someone might be eavesdropping. "Not yet. We don't know enough. It's too dangerous right now." She could tell just by how Madison was sitting that he was struggling to accept that answer, and the guilt that came along with it. "Maybe when things settle down," she offered hollowly, knowing in her heart that things would never be safe enough. The situation may become more stable, but it would never be truly safe. Not in her lifetime, maybe not ever. What was the threshold of acceptable risk that she was willing to incur when it came to Madison? They'd been so constantly in a state of threat that choosing to do something that would jeopardize him even further without the promise of a vaccine or something equivalent did not appeal to her in the slightest. It went against every bone in her body, every emotion, every fiber of her being. In retrospect, she found it difficult to believe that she'd ventured into Arm's headquarters, the heart of those who hunted her, Madison, on the hope that they hadn't destroyed a vaccine she'd only heard tell existed. She'd been desperate. She'd wanted another future for Madison. And was she now copacetic with denying the possibility of that future to other children? Other children like Madison, of giving parents like her hope? For now, yes. What good did all the risks she'd gone through, that she'd put Madison through, do if he was taken into custody by the Resistance or Arm or whatever entity sought to control a world spiraling uncontrollably downward and made to live a life of confinement, an object to be studied and used for the greater good, or harmed in any way? No good at all. Tilda answered to herself, trying to ease the guilt bubbling in her stomach. They had another vaccine, she reminded herself. And, more pettily, the Resistance had already betrayed her once. They'd already displayed not only how little they cared for her wishes, but how simply it came to them to view Madison as a thing to be used. "They'll come find us," Madison asserted quietly, ominously. "They'll be looking for us." "Get in line," Tilda muttered. Madison half turned to look at her inquisitively, and Tilda relented. "I know, but we can try, Mouse." She'd been using his nickname a lot lately. It was softer on her tongue. "We've been running from people for years. We've gotten pretty good at it." Madison chuckled a little, probably more at her inclusion of him as a partner in crime than anything else. Or maybe to make her feel better. She knew the guilt that was plaguing him. It plagued her too, but she had the luxury of pinning it on her responsibility to keep Madison safe. It was his blood and his well-being. Madison had no such deflection. Traced back to him. He squirmed in the saddle. Thunder rumbled lowly in the distance. Shouldn't I help them, though, if I can? Isn't that the right thing? Tilda pondered that for a moment. Maybe they need to help themselves, for once. It was a passive-aggressive answer, and not one that would satisfy her or Madison in the long term. But it was honest. It was the truth. What was she becoming? What was she passing on to Madison? They were shaping the world. Her decisions were impacting the future in a much more significant way than she ever could have imagined. But she did what she always did. She played it off. She ignored it and kept pressing forward, even though she didn't know where forward led. "Yes, I think so," Tilda said, wondering how Madison understood the events that played out that culminated with them going to Chicago with resistance. Did he realize they'd been betrayed, that the resistance was content to use him as leverage? Do you think that was him on the phone too? A bizarre thought, but most likely true. Though how he'd known that's where they would be to call it, the fact he'd gotten it to work at all, definitely made Tilda question the likelihood they'd be able to evade him and his ilk for long. The fog dissipated. The road came into view. Tilda pushed Scout ahead, perhaps more quickly than she should given their water situation, but she couldn't shake the feeling of being chased, pursued intently, of being observed. Tilda's mind wandered from blood and vaccines to food and water and shelter. How much of her time was spent dwelling on these things? Too much, for sure. What did people think about before this? Tilda felt an odd anxiety at the thought. They continued southward, a sea of unspoken questions between them. Tilda wished they hadn't heard the broadcast. Mountains rolled like blue waves to their left, forests to their right. The sky's hue shifted into a soft blue. Though Tilda was expecting it, they didn't pass another person on the road. It was strange, but somehow it made her feel even more threatened than it had when they were running into the herd of folks flocking to the north. More and more, Tilda came to the conclusion that visiting her parents was out of the question, but she couldn't shake the idea of it from her mind. She wanted their advice now more than ever. She needed their advice. But all those who were chasing her in Madison would be expecting that. And who's to say her parents wanted anything to do with her anymore? What must they think of her? She couldn't dislodge the image either of her parents meeting Madison. She was proud of him, of his intelligence, his curiosity, his features. She loved him, and she wanted her parents to love him as she did. It was an image she'd just have to hold in her head, she told herself firmly. If the resistance was looking for her, and they did their due diligence, they'd have to send people to search for her at her old home in Atlanta. She wondered if her mother and father were all right after Arm had presumably coerced them into sending her that message over the broadcast system. They continued on their new bearing westward as the sun moved higher in the sky above them. The temperature warmed, but the warmth seemed very superficial on their already bone-deep, cold bodies. Tilda wished now that she'd taken the time to search the desk drawers at the office they'd stayed in before they fled that morning. She might have found a map, which would come in handy right now. With their return to a paved road, Tilda had expected to see the migration of people that had led to her nearly fatal decision to cut through the state park. But they'd yet to see anyone. The roads were empty. They passed a dilapidated gas station. Tilda guided Scout under the awning that had been mostly reduced to crossbeams. She doubted they would find anything of use inside, but it would be irresponsible not to check. She fastened Scout to an exposed metal pipe right outside the glass door, patting her on the neck. The glass wasn't shattered, but cracked, a good sign that this place might not have necessarily been looted. The newspaper plastered outside the windows made it impossible to tell from the outside. When Tilda pulled at the handle, it didn't budge. It had rusted shut. She sighed in disappointment, jangling the handle fruitlessly. "Do we have to break in?" Madison rubbed his gloved hands together for warmth, reminiscent of someone scheming, hatching plots. "Let's look around. Maybe there's another way in." or a metal bar to use to pry the door open. They circled around the back, where there was indeed another door. It was locked as well, but the entire knob fell off when Tilda twisted it. Tilda reached inside the hole left by the knob, gripping her fingers around the metal rod that had connected the two knobs together, and twisted, pulling it toward her body at the same time. The white door, stained with rust and mold, gave, practically falling off the hinges as Tilda swung it outward, nearly losing her footing. An old, rotten wood smell wafted over them, and in unison they reached up to cover their noses, coughing into their elbows. After regaining her bearings, Tilda edged inside the door, tile painted a sickly green that reflected onto peeling walls, painting the room in an eerie greenish glow. The smell became less pungent, and Tilda tentatively lowered her arm, taking in her surroundings. In the corner was a rusted toilet, the ceramic cracked. Next to it was a sink, leaning forward as it pulled free from the wall. Above it was a black paper towel dispenser that looked out of place, far too modern compared to the rest of the room. In the far corner was a dingy mop in a periwinkle blue pail. The opposite wall was blank, save for the map of mold and bubbles of air pockets under the paint. There was another door straight across the one they'd entered that was now hanging by only one hinge. This one looked sturdier. Tilda strode over to it, testing the knob. Locked. This one would not be falling off like the other. Sheepishly, she half-turned to Madison, muttering for him to back up. She steadied herself on the balls of her feet, taking a deep breath, and then rammed her shoulder into the door. The impact dazed her. She saw stars. Giving her head a heavy shake, she braced herself and tried again. This time, she felt the wood give a little under her weight. Here we go, she hyped herself up. Third time's the charm. Bram. Then immediate bounce back. Nope. She rubbed her arm, the skin tingling, rolled her shoulders, glared at the offending wood. This time, the door splintered under her weight. Ouch, Tilda exclaimed softly, her hand coming up to cradle her arm. A crack ran down the middle of the pane of wood, splitting it nearly in two. Tilda kicked at the shards of wood and they clattered to the floor. Gingerly, she reached her hand through the crack, careful not to impale herself on the gigantic wooden tooth left by her maltreatment, her fingers crawling up the wood on the opposite side like a giant spider until they closed around the lock, turning it the other way. The door jerked open with a puff of stale air. Madison coughed behind her. She shouldered open the door, thinking of the ones who had owned the store, who had cared for it, had newspapered it to discourage looting, who had locked it up carefully when the world was ending, when this station could offer them nothing more. The inside was quite bland. A rectangular room with rows and rows of cheap metal shelving. Most of them held nothing but dust. Years of it, as a matter of fact. Tilda stalked down the first aisle, cataloging what little remained on the shelves. Extension cords, a couple of tubes of pills, chapstick. At the end of the metal shelving was the checkout desk. Lottery tickets and cigarette packages displayed prominently overhead. Outside, Scout whinnied, scuffing her hooves. Tilda crouched underneath the open counter that typically could be lifted and passed through, but now wouldn't budge. She reemerged behind the checkout counter. Apart from a thick layer of dust that muffled her footsteps, the tile was free of the debris she'd grown accustomed to seeing in these places. The cigar wrappers and empty pill canisters weren't there. The cash register drawers were open and empty. Not that money would do her any good these days. Clippings of newspapers detailing the spread of HSV-5, headlines gradually increasing with panic, were laid out on the counter, a morbid timeline. The last one was dated years before Tilda was born. It showed a picture of a harried-looking man, hands raised against the flashing of cameras in a sign of defeat. The caption informed her he had been the last president of the United States before it dissolved, back when there was still the manpower to sustain that level of organization and bureaucracy. On a whim, she gathered the clippings in her hand. They were incredibly thin, like they could dissolve into dust at any minute. Folded them up and slipped them into her backpack's side pocket. She'd read them later. She rifled through the drawers, coming up with nothing. She bent down and pulled open the cabinets, but they were all so empty, save for some cleaning supplies. Pivoting on her heels, she opened the last set of cabinet doors, discovering a safe. Thinking it would bother her to never know what was in there, she reached out to test the handle she was certain would be locked, only to rock back on her heels when the handle gave, as though she'd torn it free from the rust that had held it in place. Tilda wasn't sure if it had been unlocked or if after years and years of dust, rust, and general eroding that comes with aging, she had broken the lock. Inside the safe was a stack of money, a thin chain necklace with a golden cross dangling at the end, and a gun with a box of bullets. Tilda took out the pile of money, knowing it was of no use to her now, but wanting to appreciate the novelty of it. She removed a bill, it was a 20, and traced it with her fingers, parts of the odd green paper raised. It depicted the Capitol building on one side, with bushes and trees out front, and on the other, a man she didn't recognize. There was a phrase in Latin she didn't understand and another phrase, "In God we trust," that she didn't really understand either. This used to be worth something. People would buy things with this, would work jobs they hated for this, would kill for this. It was bizarre to her. In her hands, it felt like a useless piece of paper. "What is that?" Madison piped up behind her, badly startling her so that she had to grab onto the cabinet door to keep her balance. "It's money, what they used to use to buy things." She passed the bill to him, and he studied it deeply, trying to divine the meaning. Tilda flipped through the rest of the bills, almost wanting to pocket them, just knowing that at one time, that stack of paper would have saved them. It would have gotten them food and water and shelter. But now it was just extra, useless weight in her bag. Madison flipped over the bill, examining it critically this way and that, holding it up to the light and asking Tilda about the phrases, about the pyramid with the eye at the top, about the man on the back. Tilda didn't know the answer to any of his questions. As she took out the gun, making sure the safety was on and the bullets, he asked, "So, why was it worth 20? Tilda thought for a moment, the box of bullets in her hand. "Because people believed it did, Mouse. Believed it and agreed on it. But it's not actually worth anything if you don't believe it." "No, I guess not," she grinned, slipping the gun in the waistband of her jeans, her skin recoiling at the cold metal, and the box of bullets in the side pocket. "Maybe in a museum someday. If there ever were museums in the traditional sense again, now the entire world felt like an abandoned museum with no one to care for it." She closed the safe, an odd sensation of sadness for the person who'd spent so much of their life to save this money, who put it in a safe and guarded it with a gun, only to then leave it behind as all of the meaning it held fell away. "Weird," Madison breathed, holding the bill out in front of him like some delicate antique. Tilda heaved herself up and patted Madison's head. "I know. Let's keep searching, okay?" She swung herself under the countertop and continued her survey of the store, of all its odd trinkets and knickknacks that Tilda both thought were incredibly cute relics and frustratingly useless. She half-cursed past generations for taking up valuable shelf space that could have been for canned and other non-perishable food items, and used it instead for snow globes with women in bikinis and hula skirts in them, pieces of wood with trite phrases like, "I'd rather be at the beach." She passed an eclectic collection of keychains, headphones, earplugs, face masks, a collapsed shelf that had odd-looking pillows. At the end of the row, opposite the checkout counter, was the wall of refrigerated glass cases. Tilda swallowed dryly. The water, of course, was gone, as was much of everything else. There were a couple of Coca-Colas and some energy drinks, both of which were good for an energy boost, and not much else. Nevertheless, Tilda pocketed two of each, hitching her backpack further up on her shoulders. The other aisles mostly had rotten cardboard boxes, empty of the candy bars and snacks they'd once held. "Look!" Madison exclaimed, bouncing into her view with a handful of bags of chips clutched in each fist. "Fritos. and barbecue lays. Good eye, Mouse, she told him, slinging her backpack over one shoulder and putting the bounty in the front pocket. He beamed at the praise. Where'd you find these? In the back of the shelf, he pointed. The very back. Tilda nodded, bending down to inspect the bottom shelves. She found a couple of bags of M&Ms, peanut and pretzel, a bag of Cheez-Its, some sunflower seeds, and beef jerky. And a tiny jar of peanut butter. She checked the expiration date, way past. But hey, pickers can't be choosers, she told herself, putting it in the bag that was getting steadily heavier. There were also bags of popcorn that they'd be unable to pop, a cup of noodles they'd be unable to heat up, and some cans of soup and ravioli, which, if they got desperate, they could eat cold. They also scavenged a couple of boxes of Band-Aids and NSAIDs, some packets of trail mix. She would add them to her bag. And then her eyes landed on an enormous jug of water, the kind used for water coolers. Tilda guessed that since it was too heavy to carry, it had been left reluctantly. She stared at it like it was a religious icon. She could have fallen to her knees and prayed. Some she'd portion for Scout, or as much as she could drink. The rest she'd rebottle for them. Hey, Madison, go look around the store for empty bottles or bottles we could pour out whatever's in there and put water in. He stood transfixed, light catching the jug, causing the water's reflection to dance across his face. Tilda called his name again, and he snapped out of it, sprinting to the back of the store. She could hear him scuffling around the store, bottles clattering to the floor. As she unlocked the front door and started shoving against it, bits of red rust dislodging and floating in the air. The metal squealed at an ear-cringing pitch. Painfully slow, she levered open the door. Scout watched Tilda huffing and working away, bored. She wedged it open enough to wriggle out, awkwardly stepping the jug in front of her. Madison returned with a small collection of plastic bottles, sliding easily between the gap. Okay, Tilda gasped, grabbing a gray bucket from next to the empty shell of the ice machine and plunking it in front of Scout. She rested her hands on her knees for a second, winded from her battle with the door. She struggled for a moment to twist the top off until the plastic teeth finally gave, and she spun the cap off. She studied the jug for a moment, knowing she'd be unable to lift it. She'd have to tip it, but even then, she'd have to be careful not to tip it and spill that most precious liquid all over the concrete. Mouse, we're going to tip some water into this bucket for Scout, okay? Can you tip the bucket toward me? Madison readily obeyed, and Tilda knelt, shedding herself of her backpack and removing her gloves to get a better grip. She tested its weight, various points she could try and get a more secure handle on the jug. She braced herself, taking a position a little behind the jug and asked, "Ready?" Madison nodded, and she tipped the jug carefully, using her knees to help prop it up. The water trickled at first, then poured into the bucket, Tilda's arm shaking a bit with the effort. Scout's ears perked with interest, and she bent her nose down closer to the bucket. When it was almost halfway full, Tilda pulled the jug back, liquid sloshing around in the plastic. Tilda collapsed into a resting position on her hands, catching her breath. The second she'd stopped pouring, Scout had closed what little distance remained and started slurping up water. Madison looked on with jealousy. Warily, Tilda pushed herself to her knees, unzipping her backpack and rummaging around for the empty water bottles. She lined them up along with the ones Madison found. This was going to be tricky. All right, she sighed heavily. Let's start with the bigger bottles you found. Almost before she'd finished speaking, Madison held out an empty Coca-Cola bottle. Tilda smiled wryly. I'm going to go slow, okay? I don't want to lose any more water than we have to. She tipped the lip of the jug, the amount of water making it even more awkward to pour, even though it was lighter. It was still too heavy to lift, but now the water level was lower. She had to get a higher angle to pour it out. She stood, anchoring her feet far apart, cheeks puffing with exertion as she lifted the jug just barely off the ground, her arms trembling with the effort it took to control it. Water dribbled out into the bottle, clinking against the side, agonizingly slow. As the jug gradually lightened, she was able to tip it more easily, water pouring into the bottle at a much steadier clip. The jug clunked back upright, Tilda allowing her arms to hang like overcooked noodles. She popped her neck, staring at the jug like it was her arch nemesis. Madison looked at her hopefully, waiting for her permission to take a sip. "Wait till we're done, Mouse. Then you can have some." Once she'd regained some of her strength in her arms, they began again, a meager assembly line of water bottles getting filled. As the jug got lighter, the pouring got easier, which was good. Tilda doubted she had the strength to fill too many more water bottles. Scout had slowed, lapping water at a much more leisurely pace. After they filled the water bottles, there was still a bottom ring of water remaining. Tilda replaced all of the bottles but the big one, to be split between her and Madison. She retrieved a bag of sunflower seeds and M&Ms to share as well, wondering when they could find something for Scout to eat. She let Madison have the first crack at the water. He gulped it in the most controlled way he could muster, Tilda imagined. She opened the bag of sunflower seeds, cupping a small handful and eating them one by one so she'd feel like she was eating more. The sky darkened as they ate and drank, Tilda considering their bounty. The jug of water almost seemed too good to be true, and a couple of snacks to boot. And the gun, cold metal against her lower back. It had slipped lower down her waistband with all of her wrestling with the water jug. "Do you think the man's okay that we took Scout from?" Madison asked, popping an orange M&M in his mouth. "I think so. He looks like he could take care of himself. And the weather's gotten a lot better." Madison nodded reluctantly, watching the horse. She'd finished with her bucket of water and was watching them with what Tilda anthropomorphized as contentment. Tilda leaned back on her hands with a swig of water. Her lower back ached with carrying the pack and keeping the water jug steady. She glanced around. The sky grumbled. Tilda didn't see any signs to indicate what road they were on. She stood and stretched her back, her shoulders, her legs, Madison munching on the remainder of the sunflower seeds. When he was finished, she gestured for him to hold out the water bottle they'd just emptied and filled it with what was left in the water jug, replacing the cap and putting it in her pack. She rolled the discarded jug into the gas station to hide, somewhat, any obvious signs that they'd come through here. Madison stood, dusting off his jeans, and they both looked down the road, expecting to find an answer or a clue as to what the future held for them.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And that brings us to the end of this chapter. This was such a video game chapter. Like, when I was looking back over it, I was like, you can tell I play video games because it's very much like, she opened this drawer and found this item inside.
What does it read? Click A to read. Yes. Click B to toss.
Yes. Would you like to search the shelves for snacks? Yes.
Is there a way to do that interactively? Because I think that'd be funny.
I mean, honestly, someone should get on it if there
isn't.
I bet there is.
I'm guessing, yes.
It is interesting to see my past self trying to work through the good for the many conversation.
Mm.
Because if you've heard my thoughts about The Last of Us and about Star Wars even, I've got some complicated relationships with that. But it's fascinating to me that in this chapter, you're hearing Tilda try to parse out what is the best thing she can do. Like, is it going back into this place that she doesn't trust with this person she doesn't trust? But maybe it will help with a new vaccine, or is it just protecting her kid and pretending she never heard it? So it's fascinating to me where I am now versus when I was writing this.
Mm-hmm.
But also, some things are to come, listeners. That Ooh. Is for sure. I do think it's fair to say I can't go into this whole argument I had with myself after I read this chapter again, that there is a difference between a lot of the things I have a problem with and what happened here, which was sort of outright betrayal before the call to come back came. But more to come and more to say. I shall leave it there. As always, listeners, I hope that you're enjoying this. Shout out, all the shout outs to Christina, who makes them happen. It's fun. It's fun for us. So hopefully you're enjoying it. If you have any theories or thoughts or suggestions for other things we could do like this, it has to be in the public domain. But if you have a suggestion, let us know. You can email us at stephanie@momstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter @momstuffpodcast or on Instagram and TikTok @StephMoNeverToldYou. We have a YouTube page and a Tee Public store and a book. You can get wherever you get your books. Thanks as always to our super producer, Christine, our executive producer, Maya, and our contributor, Joey.
Thank you.
Thanks to you for listening. Stuff I Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.